This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with David Adelsheim and Mike Coveney. How are you guys?
Great. Thanks, Chris.
Fine, thanks.
Excellent. We're going to be talking a wee bit about Oregon wines today in the USA, Northwest USA.
Absolutely.
So why don't we start off with just a bit about yourselves, David. Do you want to start with who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. Chris, I'm one of the founding family members, if you will, of the Oregon wine industry. My wife and I started a winery back in, or started planting grapes back in 1972 and had our first vintage in 1978. On a European framework, that seems rather as a latecomer, but for Oregon and maybe even the U.S., it was kind of the point in time when the American wine industry was really getting going, particularly focused on fine wine.
Excellent. And yourself, Mike?
Well, I work for a company called Hilltop Wines. We're a bespoke sales and marketing company, and we represent Oregon here in the U.K. At a generic level. So our role is to develop the profile and raise interest in Oregon wines as a whole.
What is the defining characteristic of Oregon wine, climate and grape varieties?
Right. Oregon is like any place that's half the size of France. You would expect it to have several different regions within it and perhaps even different growing conditions and grape varieties, and that's certainly true in Oregon. Certainly Oregon came to prominence, though, in the 1970s and 80s for growing Pinot Noir in the northern part of the Willamette Valley. It's if there is any knowledge beyond the states of the wines of Oregon, it is it certainly is around Pinot Noir, cool climate, and maybe expanding beyond that to some of the other members of the Pinot family and beyond, Chardonnay, Pinot Gris, Riesling, those kinds of cool climate varieties. But there's always been other parts of the state, both in the east and the south, that have warmer climates and have had focuses on Bordelaise varieties and more recently even on Spanish and Rhone varieties. So it's easy to say that Oregon is Pinot Noir. It's about 50% right, but the other 50% is a much more complex story.
Where is Oregon from a geographical
good.
point of view?
I once tried to convince the governor to change the state motto to second one down on the left, but it didn't work. but that is where we are. Of course, you have to exclude Alaska in that and Canada. But no, we're between the state of Washington and the state of California on the West Coast.
Is Mount Rainier near you guys?
It is, but it's not very near. It's in the next state north.
It is in Washington.
Yeah. We have Mount Hood is our tallest mountain. We've got Crater Lake. What we really have is an amazingly diverse climate, starting at the Pacific Ocean, where it's a climate a bit like Britain, year-round kind of 15 degrees C or maybe 20 in the summer, and pretty moist. But once you get over the Coast Range into the Willamette Valley, you have a little bit more, slightly more continental climate with winters where it doesn't really snow and summers where it gets up to 30, 35 degrees on warm days. Go over a much taller mountain range, the Cascade Mountains, which is the volcanic mountain range, into what is basically a high desert, which is quite dry, maybe 10 inches of rain in a year. And much more extreme climates, very warm in the summer and very cold in the winter.
Do you grow any grapes in the desert? Or
we don't grow much on that side. A little bit along the Columbia River, which tempers the climate a bit. But really, most of the grapes at this point are grown in the valley between the Coast Range and the Cascade Mountains and further south in some of the other mountains.
It'd be fair to say along the Columbia River, there are several appellations, including Walla Walla, which is here over on the right-hand side.
Walla Walla sounds like an Australian wine region.
It is. It is actually one that was moved very long ago from Gondwana land. No, it's it's like a lot of names in the Pacific Northwest, and for that matter in Australia, it's an old name that you Brits changed around when you transliterated it into English, and so it's ended up being Walla Walla.
I've flown over Oregon. I've never actually been to Oregon. I've flown over. I used to live in Seattle for a while.
And okay.
Spent a lot of time commuting between there and California on the way to Australia.
Yeah.
And what always took me was flying over it was how hilly it looked. It always looked like you could never drive there because it was always so full of hills.
Right.
But there is a big valley there.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, the Willamette Valley was the goal of the Oregon Trail. Back in the 1840s and 50s, we were trying to...
The Gold Rush?
No, not the Gold Rush. In fact, this is actually a pretty important point. Back in the 1840s and 50s, Americans were trying to state their claim to the Pacific Northwest. And so the American government figured out that they could promise people who would get to Oregon free land in exchange for building a house, clearing 5 acres, and living there for 5 years. And effectively, it was a push to push Britain out of the Northwest. And it worked, apparently. You guys were pushed up above the...
I'm a Kiwi, mate.
Yeah. Okay, whatever. Anyway, the point was that this free land was given away, and that was why people came, not because of gold, but because of what was perceived to be the Garden of Eden, a climate that was much, much less extreme than in other parts of the states, much milder winters, much milder summers. And the Willamette Valley is, in fact, an amazing growing region where there are 100 or 200 different crops that are grown, plus all sorts of nursery plants, and it's a huge agricultural area.
What's the breakdown? We talked about different grape varieties.
Yeah.
Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay. What sort of breakdown? Because Pinot Noir is what I always hear about with Oregon.
Right.
So is it 50% of production, or what sort of percentage is it?
In terms of production, it's probably at this point right around 50%, maybe slightly over. Because it makes up that much, it is the variety that you hear most about. Below that, Pinot Gris is maybe a third of the production of Pinot Noir, and below that, Riesling and then Chardonnay. Acreage is also in the roughly in that same relationship. Below those four come a huge number of other grape varieties, as I said, Bordelaise varieties, Tempranillo, Syrah, those kinds of things.
Do you grow much non-vinifera?
Virtually none. After Prohibition ended in 1933, Oregon was left with basically no continuity of winemaking. And so the wine industry was slowly reconstructed, starting with fruit wines and non-vinifera wines. But once vinifera was established in the 1960s, it rapidly gained a foothold and has all but pushed out anything else but vinifera.
Now that we've sort of got an overview of the region, where do you sell your wines?
Something around 30 or 40% of the wines are still sold in the state of Oregon.
Yep.
An awful lot of wineries, to say this, there are perhaps 350 bricks and mortar wineries and perhaps 450 brands. All but maybe 120, 150 of those are sold at the winery or only in Oregon. But the larger wineries and those with more marketing understanding and more push to be successful are selling most of their wines outside the state of Oregon. I mean, a winery like ours, which is sort of in the 15th, 16th largest winery in the state, if you will, we're selling less than 10% of our wine in Oregon, but virtually everything else in the U.S. We sell nothing in the U.K., for instance, and only modest amounts in other export markets.
Why is that?
We can.
You don't need to. There's no need to do it.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say that because of the scale of the industry in Oregon, generally speaking, they haven't had to export. So you do have a large concentration in the state of Oregon, as David says, then outside of that within the continental USA. I think the three most important export markets are pretty much Canada, Japan, and the UK. And we've been focusing an effort on the UK market now for 2 or 3 years with significant results.
And how has the UK consumer taken to Oregon wine? Because it does have some stiff competition.
It does have stiff competition. I mean, ultimately in the UK, we're very lucky because we're the self-elected centre of the wine world, and therefore the consumer here it has the luxury of being able to access wines from every part of the wine-producing world. That said, I think there's huge interest in the wines here. We're very fortunate in Oregon that we have Pinot Noir, and that is synonymous with Oregon. There are many wine-producing regions where, you know, you're not kind of sure where their strength lies. Within Oregon, and certainly within the export markets, you know, people do immediately associate Oregon with Pinot Noir. As we've seen and spoke already, there are many other grape varieties produced there, but there's a lot of interest in the Pinot Noir, and we can stand shoulder to shoulder with quality Pinot Noir produced in Burgundy, New Zealand, Australia, etc.
Did you get much of an uplift with the movie Sideways?
It's amazing that the movie Sideways was about Pinot Noir in the southern part of Central Coast of California, and instantly Oregon sold out of Pinot Noir, which is an indication of how carefully people associate place with grape variety.
It's true. Well, Otago did quite well out of it as well. You talk to Pinot producers in New Zealand, they reckon they got an uplift from it as well, which is interesting.
Pinot Noir is an interesting varietal because there are few varietals that hold so much emotion in somebody. There's a very much an emotive kind of connection between consumers of Pinot Noir, very passionate about Pinot Noir. And I think that's why something like Sideways kind of ignited that feeling in people and probably had a benefit to Pinot producers around the world.
A lot of people say Pinot Noir is one of the most...
You're not going to say difficult, are you?
No, I wasn't going to say difficult.
Oh, thank God.
It is difficult grape. I was going to say a lot of people say it expresses the climate and the geology very, very effectively. And as a result, how would you define Oregon Pinot Noir?
Pinot Noir really does reflect the place where it's grown. There's no question about that. I think because it's actually a pretty subtle grape, the climate and the geology, as you said, really do have a big influence. As our industry has matured a bit and we've tried to understand what is unique about Oregon Pinot Noir as opposed to warmer climate Pinot Noir as opposed to Burgundy, I think we've come to three things that we can point to, at least as a generalization. The first is a rather intense fruitiness in Pinot Noir, but it's fresh fruitiness. So fresh red cherries or black cherries, raspberries or blackberries, not jammy fruitiness. Rather intense, but not over-the-top intense. But also not as much of an emphasis on earthiness and other flavors as you might find in Burgundy, let's say. So Oregon occupies, in terms of fruitiness, a place that's somewhere between Burgundy and Pinot Noirs from warmer climates, whether that's Australia or California. The next thing that I would point to is the acidity that a cool climate gives a wine that we share a bit with Burgundy, but in Oregon, acidity plays this role of keeping the wine fresh and lively on the palate. Compared to warmer climate Pinots that don't have as much acidity and rely a bit more on tannin to provide that backbone, Oregon wines are pretty distinct in that way. So we really, while it doesn't work, if you're presented a wine, can you tell that it's from Oregon? Well, I don't know. But I think we can figure out that if it's Burgundy, it's probably going to have less overt fruit, maybe a little more tannin and acidity, but certainly is a little more austere than Oregon wines would be, particularly in their youth. And on the other hand, warm climate Pinots are going to be closer to fruit bombs and jammy fruit bombs with a little less acidity and maybe a little more reliance on tannin.
What sort of alcohol levels are typical?
Well, typical would be mid-13s. On the west coast of the states, sugar is not an issue. In fact, sugar is an issue almost in reverse. We can often have too much sugar if we wait too long. So we need to be very careful to keep the wines in balance. I mean, everybody in every growing region is going to be concerned about balance, but for us it's different than it would be in Burgundy, where for them getting enough sugar is often an issue. For us, not getting in too much sugar is often the issue.
And ageability of the wines?
In spite of what people might think when they first try Oregon Pinots, they actually age
pretty much like Burgundies. 10, 15 years is pretty straightforward for Oregon Pinots. And in that respect, it's the cool climate, I think, that confers that aging ability. The combination of acidity and a lot of fine grain tannins in our wines, I think, keep them from moving very quickly into old age.
What's the future of Oregon wines, do you think? Because you've got sparkling wine grapes there as well, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay. You know, have you ever thought about sparkling wine, or where are you going?
There definitely is sparkling wine in Oregon. But I think certainly in the U.S., the market for Pinot Noir as a still wine, ageable red still wine, is far greater than the market for sparkling wine, which many people consider a wine for the holidays, and then let's get on to real wine after that. Having said that, the sparkling wines from Oregon, as you can imagine, would be delicious, and there are several lovely versions. But I think the real issue for Oregon is that we are a place that where crop levels are kept very low. The way to cheat Mother Nature in a cool climate, you shouldn't be able to make rich, round wines. And the only way you can do that is by keeping crop levels down at 30, 35 hectoliters per hectare, the same as in Burgundy. That automatically means that the wines are expensive. And so introducing expensive, cool climate wines into new markets like the UK is something that takes a lot of education along with selling and marketing.
That brings on to you, Mike. What is the future in the UK market, do you think?
Well, I see a rosy future for Oregon wines in the UK market, but it's not an overnight success. As David has alluded to, you know, Oregon does not possess large areas producing cheap wine. It is a premium producing area with low yields, and therefore our future will be steady growth. That's what I'd like to see. I think the interest in Pinot Noir clearly will continue, and therefore Oregon should benefit as a result of that. But it's also looking at Oregon within the context of USA as a whole. American wine here, there is a lot of interest in, and we fit within part of that. So I see a very good future for us, but it's one of just continued steady growth.
One last question for you, Mike. Oregon wines, not really common in the shops. Where would someone in the UK get them if they're after them?
Well, there's two things there, Chris. Firstly, if you're looking for more information just about Oregon wine in general and understanding what the state of Oregon is about, then there's a great website, www.oregonwine.org, and that's a great place to learn about the wineries. There's links there to more information. So that's a starting point. In terms of seeking stockists here in the UK, the best thing for people to do is to email me at mike@hilltopwines.co.uk, and I can then share information on where the wines are available. We're hoping that in the coming months we may have some high street availability, but we'll see about that.
Is it still quite a niche online? A lot of wines available online, are they?
Well, there's people like Great Western Wine. They have an online presence, everywine.co.uk. Noel Young, who's a very reputable independent merchant, Wimbledon Wine Cellars. So there's an increasing number of people stocking the wines.
I think we'll wrap it up there, guys. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Chris, thanks a lot for the time today.